I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. New Jersey residents were surprised, shocked, and angered when the Christie administration announced a $225 million settlement with ExxonMobil to clean up contaminated parts of North Jersey. This was after the state had argued in court for $8.9 billion in damages. Governor Christie defended the settlement, arguing that the money was in addition to the cleanup Exxon was required to do. This controversy isn't going away anytime soon. There's time for public comment, followed by a court ruling on the deal. Our guest, Kate Czernicki, has been covering this for the New York Times. We asked her to come back and help us explain some of the twists and turns of these negotiations. And, Kate, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
So if I'm driving in my car on the New Jersey Turnpike, what part of New Jersey are we talking about?
It's just as you're approaching, getting up to where the approaches to the Holland and Lincoln tunnels are, just south of there. If you know where the IKEA is, it's around
I
there.
I do.
Right near there.
And what is the extent of the damage? I mean, is there any question about the extent of environmental damage up there?
No, that was established in a trial, and I think the state, the only people disputing it are Exxon. But it's thousands of acres, and the damage to the land and into the water and to the environment is extensive and has been established in court. The court has established Exxon's liability.
And we're talking about things like oil refineries and petrochemical plants, things like that. The kind of what spills, runoffs, dumping.
Yes, exactly. So, I think a lot of people who've driven along the New Jersey Turnpike have that impression of the refineries there. That is exactly what you're thinking of, is the contamination from those refineries.
Now, where did this $8.9 billion come from? This goes back about 10 years. Where did that
right.
number come from?
So some of it, about $6 billion of that is the issue is whether you remediate or whether you restore the land. So remediation can be really just putting, and what Exxon argued to do, is basically just put new soil on top to cover it over, basically to cap it. Restoration means to restore the environment to help restore the wildlife, really to sort of make it not pristine, but put it more back to what it was before the damage had occurred. So the $6.3 billion was for restoration, which is the bigger figure of that. And then the rest of it, about $2.8 billion, I think, was for damages, loss of use damages.
And this goes back about 10 years. This was a suit filed by the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, essentially to cover damages, including compensation to make the public whole. That was their language.
Right. And again, another big ruling in this case was Exxon argued that New Jersey had one of the earliest, in fact, the federal Superfund law, a lot of people say it is modeled on New Jersey's law. Federal Superfund law was passed in 1980. New Jersey was the late 70s. Exxon argued that it only had to clean up going back to the 70s when that law was passed. The state argued successfully in court that it had to go back to 1906 when Exxon took over this plant, when the damages began.
1906, that's more than 100 years, right?
Yes, exactly.
Now, my understanding is that the Christie administration argued, and there was a trial about a year ago in 2014, that the state was owed $8.9 billion, yes?
Yes, yes. So the state sued, as you said, in 2004. That was the McGreevy administration. There had been efforts to settle this case. The Corzine administration made an offer to settle for, I think it was $550 million. And then the Christie administration 2 years ago offered to settle for $325 million. The Christie administration will point to this and say, well, look, John Corzine wanted to settle this case too. The difference there is, first of all, that the number of the Corzine administration was arguing for about twice what the state got in the end in this final settlement that's now before the court, $225 million. But also, that was before the part of the legal proceedings where the court established that they did have to pay damages going back more than 100 years. So the damage, you would think that the damages would have actually increased when you're thinking that we're not going to pay just back to the 1970s. We're going to pay back to 1906.
So where did this $225 million come from? And this was and who negotiated this? Meanwhile, there's a judge whose job it is to decide about compensation or compensation for damages. Who was negotiating this $225 million?
That was being negotiated between the Christie administration and Exxon privately. So in around sometime in I think it was either late January or early February, the Christie administration emailed the judge and said, hold off on your decision. The trial, as you said, was last year. It was about an eight-month trial.
Right.
Very long proceedings, very involved. The court was set. Again, liability was established. This was a trial to establish the damages that Exxon should have to pay. The state was arguing again for the $8.9 billion. The judge was set to rule. Meanwhile, the Christie administration continued negotiating with Exxon and came to the judge and said, you know, hold off on your ruling. We think we're close to a settlement. So it is sort of, I think, one of the things that has outraged people is that, you know, why not just wait until the judge makes a decision? I mean, the Christie administration would argue, or does argue, that Exxon is very tough in negotiations. They were bound to appeal, that they have, the state has settled with other oil companies or other energy companies, and that Exxon was really fighting, was really appealing at every turn, and was going to keep appealing, so why not get the money now?
Hmm.
I think other people would say, why not just at least see what the judge does? New Jersey had the leg up in the negotiations, having won all these favorable rulings.
So who was negotiating then for the administration? Was it the administration itself? Did it involve the attorney general, for instance, or DEP?
Yeah, so this case started in the attorney general's office, which is where you would expect it to start. They had used outside counsel. At a certain point, Christopher Perino, who's now the general counsel to Governor Christie in Governor Christie's office, took over the negotiations. The Christie administration says that makes sense because Mr. Perino had been handling the case when he worked in the attorney general's office. I think the Christie administration has, or Governor Christie in particular, has such a reputation for being so hands-on and so controlling that I think people look and say, well, his general counsel or his chief counsel took over the negotiating of this case. It's more heavy-handedness by the administration that they were sort of ultimately big-footing the attorney general's office.
But at the same, I'm still sort of, you know, struggling through all these various negotiations. How do you go from $8.9 billion to $225, which I think is something like 3 cents on the dollar?
3 cents on the dollar, exactly. So I actually misspoke earlier. I should have said that the restoration of the sites was the smaller figure. That was the $2.6 billion. The $6.3 billion was the loss of use damages. So I think that was what Exxon was really arguing against, this notion that they would have to pay loss of use damages. What Exxon would say was, this property was never used by the public. It wasn't like it was a park or a playground that they suddenly put these refineries in. That it has never been public land, and so why should they have to restore it? But again, I think, you know, the state was saying, the Exxon was arguing, well, we're going to offer you $100 million because that was the total of the previous what's known as natural resource damages lawsuits that the state had filed. They said, look, we're going to give you this, is you're still going to be able to claim that this is the biggest settlement you've ever had. It's more than any other settlement in fact, it's more than any of the settlements added up. Now, critics of the decision would say, or of this settlement would say, well, of course it was a huge figure because it's the biggest, it's the most contamination. It's the biggest, you know, environmental contamination that we have in the state, so the numbers should be commensurate with that. But how you go from $8.9 billion to $225 million, I think, is that you just have a company that doesn't want to pay.
Well, and we've also have Governor Christie. He did defend the settlement. He argued that this money was in addition to the cleanup that Exxon was required to do. So from your reporting, is there more money that Exxon is required to pay for this cleanup?
Well, theoretically, yes. Practically, the question is whether Exxon will clean up. That settlement, what Governor Christie said about, you know, we negotiated that there was no cap, that was in 1991. One of the reasons this suit was filed is that the previous administrations were not satisfied with Exxon's progress in cleaning up that land. In documents that environmental organizations have gotten from Exxon, Exxon is arguing to spend as little money as possible on this rather than restore the land. Again, they want to remediate, and their version of remediation is not to, the environmental groups say you have to replace the soil. What Exxon wants to do is basically soil over. So in other words, you're covering up the damage, but that can, you still have the damage underneath in the groundwater in the soil.
You and your colleague Benjamin Weiser have been reporting on this for the New York Times. Chris Christie said, I think this was last week, if you read the New York Times, you would never know about the cleanup requirement. The Times would actually have to say something nice about me.
Yeah, well, Governor Christie believes that we are on a crusade to get him, that we're all about endorsing Hillary Clinton. I think that's not quite true. It was interesting. The administration put out, there was a hearing on this on Thursday in the legislature in New Jersey, and the Governor Christie actually put out some bullet points. The first three were taken from our story to argue in his behalf, and then the fourth was his quote from how you can't believe anything you read in the New York Times. So he wants it both ways, I guess.
Now, the Judiciary Committee, they did have a hearing last week. They voted, what, 24-0 to urge the judge to reject this settlement?
Yes, they did. So this the settlement has actually not been made public. My colleague Ben Weiser, who you mentioned, found out about this before it was made public. It's going to be in the public in the New Jersey Public Register in early April, where people the public will be able to read the settlement offer, and then there is a 30-day comment period. Mm-hmm. So what they're legislators are urging is for the judge to reject the settlement.
And does the judge does he have final say on this?
Well, he does. You know, he does have final say on the settlement. What he doesn't have final, he can't say to Exxon, you have no right to appeal. Of course, Exxon could ultimately appeal this.
Sure. And as you said earlier, there were some other companies that were involved in negotiations. It sounds like most of them settled. Exxon is the sort of lone holdout as it comes to this compensation for damages.
Yes. And part of that, again, is that this, you know, this is a huge project. The numbers are just the sheer, you know, the acreage and the damage is so much larger than anything else.
And there's a time for public comment as well?
Yes, there's a 30-day period for public comment. That's another move in the legislature is to extend that comment so it would be 60 days.
Oh, from 30 days until 60 days?
Yeah.
And when there's a place, do you know where people, if people want to comment on this, is it a matter of going to going to Trenton and
No, testify? I think it's written to the court is my understanding.
This is a big story in New Jersey, is it not?
It is a big story. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, environmental damage is kind of abstract to a lot of people. It's not really an abstraction in New Jersey. Again, you see this from the New Jersey Turnpike. You see these refineries. The state is the most, and it's the most densely populated. It also has the highest number of Superfund sites in the country. And it's really the impact of the environmental damage is really huge in the state.
And we're talking about Bayonne, a couple of other communities that live kind of near this contaminated area.
Yes, exactly. So the water, it's the water basically between New Jersey and Staten Island is the area.
Oh, between New Jersey and Staten Island. Yeah. You know, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. Talking with Kate Czernicki. She covers New Jersey for the New York Times and has been covering this story that the Chris Christie administration, recently settled a long-standing lawsuit against ExxonMobil for $225 million instead of the $8.9 billion that the state had originally sought. Many people shocked. Some people are rather angry about this as well. Kate Czernicki and her colleague Ben Weiser have been writing about this for the New York Times. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, again talking with the New York Times. Kate Czernicki, she covers New Jersey. She's taking us through some of the twists and turns of negotiations between the Christie administration and ExxonMobil, having to do with cleaning up contaminated parts of the state in northern New Jersey. And that included pretty much a 10-year courtroom battle to cover $8.9 billion in damages. Many people were surprised. Some were outraged when the Christie administration recently announced a settlement for much less, for $225 million. And again, to join the conversation, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Kate, your colleague Ben, who was been writing about this with you, did look into contributions to Chris Christie's administration from ExxonMobil, contributions to the Republican Governors Association, I guess, when he was heading that up. What did he find?
Well, so Exxon did make large contributions to the Republican Governors Association right before and during the year that Chris Christie was head of the RGA, which was last year, and his term ended in November. So Exxon has made contributions to the RGA before. Their contributions during Governor Christie's tenure as leader of the RGA were higher. You know, I think that's the other thing that troubles people is just the overlay of politics in all this, in the sense that that Governor Christie was that it would send two things. First of all, it would help to get the money right away, to have a settlement right away. It would help Governor Christie plug holes in his budget. The state is in pretty dire financial shape, still coming out of the recession. There's no surplus. There's no rainy day fund left. So he really needs the money, and this will be used, as previous environmental settlements have been, to plug holes in the budget. The other thing is that I think people think, you know, environmentalists say this is going to send, Governor Christie wants to run for president, this is going to send the right message to energy companies and to conservatives who believe these suits are overblown. And that message is we're open for business, we are industry friendly. So, for instance, when the Christie administration came in, Exxon was looking to continue these negotiations. They had only worked with Democratic administrations before. And so they hired, as their lobbyist, George Gilmore, who was one of the most prominent Republicans in the state. He's chairman of the Ocean County Republican Party. And really sort of your readers down there think of George Norcross as the Democratic boss of the state.
Sure.
Gilmore is sort of the Republican equivalent of that. So Exxon brought in, Exxon understood the politics here. They understood that they needed to appeal to the Christie administration or to a Republican administration differently. So clearly they were, clearly they understood the power of the donations to the RGA.
You mentioned this settlement money, and this, this gets into the weeds, but these are really important weeds. That anything, as I understand it, and probably from reading your reporting, Kate, anything more than $50 million from an environmental settlement goes into offsets budget deficits in the general fund?
Right. So if you have a 200, and this is a provision that the Christie administration put into the budget last year, and they're trying to put into the budget for the next fiscal year. So essentially, if you have there's a Passaic River settlement for $190 million. So $140 million of that is going into plug holes in the budget. This is, it sort of reflects other budget moves that Governor Christie has done. Particularly, he's taken money that energy consumers, so all of us ratepayers on our electric bills, gas bills, whatever, we pay fees, and those fees go to what's called a clean energy fund. The clean energy fund is supposed to encourage the development of green industries. It's supposed to encourage people to do things like put solar panels on their house and have more energy efficiency in their homes. Instead, Governor Christie has taken $1 billion of that money and put it into his general fund. So the money is not going towards energy efficiency. Mm-hmm. It's going to plug holes in the budget. So it's, in other words, it's not going towards energy efficiency. It's going to pay the utility bills at state office buildings.
Well, and just picking up on that, let's say this $225 million holds. So then $50 million would go to what, remediation, and $175 million into defray some
the
of these?
The general fund, exactly.
Into the general fund.
Yeah. And the general fund is obviously the operating budget of the state of New Jersey.
And if let's say there were an $8.9 billion settlement, would $8 billion go into the general fund?
Yeah, essentially, yes. You'd have more than $8 billion. Now, I think the administration would say, "Well, we were never going to get that $8 billion." And I think even some environmentalists agree, but they do think that the state, the numbers that I've heard, or people seem to think that they would have at least gotten $3 billion. So the figure would have been significantly higher.
Bradley Campbell, who was the head of the DEP in New Jersey and helped, was part of the suit that led to this $8.9 billion, had a pretty critical piece in the New York Times, basically saying that the Christie administration elbowed aside the attorney general and career employees who had developed and prosecuted litigation to cut a favorable deal with Exxon. Is there some truth to that from your reporting?
Well, I think there is some truth to that. Certainly, the bare facts of that are true. What I mentioned earlier about Chris Perino, the governor's chief counsel, taking over the negotiations in the end. I do think that some people at DEP felt that they had been, as I said earlier, bigfooted by this. The administration would argue that it made sense to include the governor's office, particularly because Chris Perino had been in the attorney general's office before and worked on the settlement there.
Any word from the judge, or is he being mum about this whole?
No, the judge has been mum about this. The other thing is, though, what's interesting is that the Christie administration relied on outside counsel for this case. So you'd think that, again, having spent all this money on outside legal fees, that they would have held out at least to see what the judge said rather than taking it into the governor's office. That has sort of increased the sense that this was all about politics, that this was about money to the RGA, that this was about sending a message to companies that might contribute to the governor's future political prospects.
Let me. It seems like a good time to bring in Jerry from Medford, New Jersey, on Radio Times. Jerry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Kate. I've been following your reporting on this. It's been excellent, and I've read a lot about this issue. And one of the questions I have, I live in New Jersey, obviously, is the $225 million settlement, considering that this has been a long, long, drawn-out legal battle with outside counsel and in-house counsel, does that cover the cost of pursuing this legal case? Does anyone know that?
My understanding is that the $225 million, that part of that will go to legal fees. I think that is above the $50 million that has to go to remediation. I think part of the additional leftover $175 million leftover would have to go to legal fees. And the best guess seems to be that that's quite a significant. I think it's up to 20% of that.
Does that take care of it, Jerry?
Yeah, sure does. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. And again, you can call as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And again, talking with the New York Times' Kate Czernicki. She covers New Jersey. We are talking about a settlement deal that was announced recently between the Christie administration and ExxonMobil for $225 million. That is a lot of money to help clean up a portion of New Jersey, near the New Jersey Turnpike, near I guess that would be the Newark Airport up there as well. But this also includes the fact that there was a 10-year courtroom battle to recover something like $8.9 billion for damages. So we are talking about how we got from there to here. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Kate, is there any way to know, and Christie's popularity has been tumbling in his home state, how this is playing with the public in New Jersey?
I haven't seen any polling on that issue in particular. And I think a lot of these problems are a little, I'm not sure people understand, but I do think that there's been, I've been actually surprised at the number of people who think that this is just, a ridiculous deal and that, again, pennies on the dollar. I think that's what sticks with people. But I haven't seen any I haven't seen any numbers to show how it reflects.
And as you said, there's a 60-day commentary period, and
30-day period that will begin after the settlement is published in the New Jersey Register in early April. I think again, the legislature has really stepped up its response to this. They're trying to get they've started a petition trying to get people to urge the judge to reject the settlement. Republicans in the legislature say that they disagree with this. They say, this would be unprecedented to have, the legislature urging the judge to overturn a decision. But I do think that there's been a lot of attention to it, so that there will be, something that might have sort of been obscured in the New Jersey Register. It's not something that a lot of people read. But I think it's gotten a lot of attention in the last couple of weeks.
But if the Judiciary Committee voted 24-0 to urge the judge to reject the settlement, that means it was bipartisan.
Exactly. The other thing that they are doing is urging that the $50 million cap that we just talked about, that you would not be able to steer so much money to the general fund, that in fact half of all settlements above that $50 million, so again half of the $175 million if we accept that the settlement goes through, half of that would have to go to remediation.
We have a tweet from Margot. She says, who was Exxon's negotiator before Gilmore? Do you know?
I think they were just Ted Wells, who's a lawyer in New York City, his wife was in the Corzine administration. So he's obviously a prominent New Jersey resident. He was there. He was Exxon's lawyer.
Let me see what Gar from Cherry Hill has to say. Gar, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you very much. Love your show. Love the
Thanks.
Topic. I'm a retiree of Shell Oil Company, 25 years with the company. I was a regional manager for finance and planning up here in the Northeast. We have a single service station in South Jersey where a driver dropped 1,000 gallons on the surface. It went into a retention pond, and the environmental cleanup bill for that alone was $15 million by the time I retired, and it's still counting.
Yeah.
And the idea that a refinery that takes up hundreds of acres and has leaked God knows how many gallons of petroleum product into the ground could be cleaned up on the order of $100 million is absolutely shameful.
I'm so glad that you brought...
There's nothing honest about this settlement.
Well, Gar, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Kate, go ahead.
I was just saying, I'm really glad that you brought this up, because one thing that has also outraged people that I think, you know, environmentalists have said has been overlooked because people are looking at the sheer numbers of this, but at the last minute, the Christie administration threw in sort of a sweetener to the deal, which was that Exxon would be relieved of their responsibility to clean up. We believe it's 1,000 service stations, so 1,000 gas stations. So consider the problem you just mentioned times 1,000. In addition to a site, a former mobile site in Paulsboro in South Jersey. So there's, you know, a lot of people are saying that $225 million or $175 million, whatever it's going to be, that's not even going to clean up those gas stations. So it's the gas stations in the state, which were never part of the litigation, were thrown in at the last minute. The administration said, okay, Exxon, you're not going to have to pay to clean these up. This will settle any liability that you might have had for any future liability you might have had with regard to those gas stations. We're also going to throw in 14 additional sites around the state.
Gar, appreciate the call to Radio Time.
Another thing I'd like to throw in.
Sure, go ahead, Gar.
And that is, any salaried employee of the state of New Jersey who is a signatory to this deal should be fired for incompetence.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And I wonder, Kate, I mean, you talk about some of the complexity of this, but at the same time, if we're talking about gas stations and oil spills and cleanup, that in and of itself is something I think people can relate to.
Yeah, I think the point that I was making is I think a lot of people wouldn't have necessarily known that this case was even going on, because, you know, it's not like people are browsing through the New Jersey Register and right. looking at it. I do think that people do understand that this is, as I said earlier, it's a very densely populated state. There's not a lot of open space, and we have everyone knows about the Pine Barrens and things, but otherwise it is, you know, the pollution is very close to people. People understand it. They can relate to it.
As you mentioned, the way it's written now, additional money over $50 million goes to help to balance the budget. Are we talking about the pension liability, for instance? Is that the big ticket item in New Jersey?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the pension fund paying that off is the biggest ticket item in the budget annually. So theoretically, this money would go to that. However, the pension payment for next year is supposed to be $2.9 billion. So $175 million is not going to nearly cover that.
Is there any way to know? And I know that Ted Cruz is going to announce that he's running for president. Any bead that you have, Kate, on Chris Christie's presidential aspirations at this point?
Well, certainly people in his administration are moving over to the campaign. He's got a leadership pack set up. He's traveling the country. You know, as an all but announced presidential candidate, I think they are waiting, till a little bit later in the spring. I think what the governor thinks now is, what his people are thinking is that, yes, he's down in the polls now. He's had a little, he's had some bumps. He may have some more bumps as the Bridgegate, if we have Bridgegate indictments and the George Washington Bridge Lane closings in the next couple of weeks or months. But they really believe that come the fall, there will be debates among the Republican candidates. He will do very well in the debates, and he will be sort of, remember that they will all say that at this point, in a previous cycle, John McCain was considered, dead in the water, and he became the nominee.
You mentioned Bridgegate. Is there any update on that? I know that it's being investigated, but it sounds like the investigators are keeping things pretty quiet.
Yes, certainly the U.S. Attorney's Office is sort of renowned for keeping a tight seal on things, so we don't know. There have been so many bubbles. I mean, last summer we thought that it was absolutely positively going to be in July. I think then people thought it was absolutely positively going to be in October, and then it was absolutely positively going to be in January. So I think I'm done.
You're done predicting?
Yes.
But it is coming, I guess, at some point.
Yes, yes.
So looking at this ExxonMobil settlement so far, what will you be following? What will you be looking for as someone who's been covering this for the Times?
Well, I think the next thing is to obviously look at the fine points of the settlement that are published, and then see what the reaction is. I think the big question is going to be, will the judge approve this settlement? But I also think, this has to be considered, as I mentioned earlier, in the context of the governor's previous environmental record and how he has steered a lot of money that was intended for environmental cleanup or energy efficiency has gone to the general fund. So it's of a piece mm-hmm. with previous actions.
And will the State Department of Environmental Protection, have they weighed in on this deal at all?
Well, I think the Attorney General's office and then the chief counsel was arguing on behalf of the state. So I think at this point the DEP has the governor's office is speaking for the administration, not the DEP.
Going back to one of your pieces, the statement by the act, I'm quoting here, the statement by the acting Attorney General John J. Hoffman and Environmental Commissioner Bob Martin said the litigation and settlement negotiations, quote, as with all cases of this magnitude, have been conducted by Mr. Hoffman's office, working in coordination with the Environmental Agency and the governor's office. What they seem to be saying is that we were all basically working on this together. It wasn't necessarily Christie's office taking the lead. Is that how you read that?
Yes, I think that was the nod there. I think that was to contradict what Bradley Campbell had said in his op-ed piece in the Times.
And have you talked with Bradley Campbell?
I have not. Mike Ben has spoken with him.
He seems pretty angry about this.
Well, he's the one who started this suit under the McGreevy administration. So I think if you started a suit and you expect that you're going to get this huge judgment and then it goes for pennies on the dollars, you're going to be pretty upset.
Well, we have to say goodbye to you, Kate, and thanks, as always, for joining us on Radio Times and getting us up to speed on a potentially very complicated issue, but a very important one, certainly for the people of New Jersey.
Thank you.
And that's Kate Zernike. She covers New Jersey for The New York Times. We're going to be shifting gears after this very short break. We'll be talking about the euro, the fact that it has tumbled so dramatically, what it means for Europe, what it means for the U.S. And we have a guest who will be joining us in the final portion of this hour of Radio Times. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to that. And again, our guest will be Paul Wallace, European Economics Editor for The Economist. You can join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe, and we are in a curious little pause here. And then I just said goodbye to Kate Zernike from The New York Times, who had been covering this ExxonMobil settlement. But we have not yet made contact with our second guest in this hour of the show to talk about the euro and the dollar, which means that you can join our conversation or even start a conversation by giving us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times, and you can tell us what is on your mind as we vamp a bit between guest one and guest two. And coming up in the second hour of Radio Times, our guest is Barney Frank. He's written a new book called, interestingly, Frank. And also some news from today. Ted Cruz is officially tossing his hat in the ring. He's going to be running for president, the first person to do so. Many people making noises about running for president. It looks like he's the first one to make it official, which will be an interesting news item for today. And again, to join our conversation, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Essentially, it's your chance to put some stuff on the table. We produce 500 shows a year. You can produce this little segment for us. And again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We've spent a lot of time on Radio Times talking about, and we will be devoting a lot more time to the mayor's race here in Philadelphia, an issue of interest not just to people who live and work here in Philadelphia, but of interest to those living here in the Delaware Valley. This is a Philadelphia race, but it has regional and even statewide and probably a tri-statewide implication. So that's something that we're going to spend a fair amount of time on Radio Times digging into. We do cover politics, as you well know, and that will be something we'll spend a fair amount of time on, as we did on the governor's race in Pennsylvania, talking about Tom Wolf and Tom Corbett. Very important. We're pretty wonky here on Radio Times and enjoy talking about a number of wonky political politically related issues. One of the reasons that we have Barney Frank, he'll be joining us in about 15 minutes or so. And again, I'm watching a studio of four people scrambling to get our phones working. Not sure exactly what the problem is. But again, you can start a conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times and let us know what is on your mind. It's a very busy news time of the year. It seems that there are very few days where there isn't some news-related item, and that's certainly true here on Monday. Looking ahead, we got a busy week ahead on Radio Times as well, trying to keep up with a number of local and national and international issues as well. But we want to hear from you. You are certainly very much a part of the conversation, something that we look forward to. And again, I'm looking at a room full of people tearing their hair out, essentially scratching their heads and trying to get us set up with our second guest in this hour. I'll be honest with you, these are one of the bad dreams that I've had on Radio Times when we are between guests and no callers and no guests, and it's just me talking on the radio. So do give us a call if you want to start a conversation. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. As I said, Barney Frank will be joining us in the second hour of Radio Times. Written a really interesting book, looking both his personal life and his personal evolution, and also the 40 years that he spent in politics, an observer and a participant in a number of pretty extraordinary political events, including the Clinton impeachment, including Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and a number of issues as well. So you can certainly stay with us for that conversation, which is coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Let me see what we have. Looks like Janet calling us from Collingswood, New Jersey. And Janet, go ahead. You are on Radio Times.
Marty, I just heard your piece.
Yes.
On the mobile settlement.
Yes.
And as a senior in the state of New Jersey, I feel like we are being raped by our governor.
Janet, that's a pretty powerful word. Why do you say that?
Well, because if you look at the settlement, and I've heard that it's been going on for 10 years and that the legal costs will be, I believe I heard, if I heard correctly, 20% of the settlement. What's left? I mean, there's very little left for taking care of the problem. And we are going to end up eating it. Those of us who are middle class New Jerseyites and seniors, et cetera, we're going to end up paying for all of this because of our governor and politics.
Well, it's interesting that and he has gotten a fair amount of criticism, not just from the New York Times, but also from other news outlets in New Jersey. Apparently, the first offer coming from the Christie administration was for $325 million. That was rejected. Corzine, when he was governor of New Jersey, offered $550 million. That was also rejected. So this is sort of an ongoing negotiations that have been going back and forth. But you're right. It goes back to 2004. The state asking for $2.6 billion for restoration, $6.3 billion in compensation to make the public whole. That was a part of the negotiations. Does this affect, are you a Christie critic anyway? Is this, or is this someone?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
How did I know that, Janet? So you're not pleased?
I'm not pleased at all, and I'm surprised that there haven't been more people screaming and yelling about it. This is a big deal.
Well, we think it's a big deal, and as Kate Zernike said from the New York Times, it's not officially public yet, but they obviously got wind of some of the negotiations and the deal, and which is why it has become news. But I appreciate your call to Radio Times, Jenna. Thanks so much.
Thank you, and thanks for taking my call.
Oh, absolutely.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Let me see what looks like Maria from Tyler's Ford, PA. Maria, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
I just had a thought about what you said about your worst nightmare where you have the dead air.
Yeah, exactly. But you're here, Maria.
Well, you are such a professional, and if you have any anxiety over the situation, it does not play out over the radio. It sounds like you have everything under control, and it's just a pleasure to listen to you every day. But well, my story was I was a bartender for 10 years, and I haven't even bartended now for about 10 years, but I still have nightmares. Five people deep at the bar, no clean glasses, kegs are kicked. It was just kind of a funny thing that struck with me, and I just wanted to make a comment that you are just such a professional, and it's wonderful to listen to you, and, you know, it's... any anxiety that you might have had does not play out over the air.
That's good. Well, I can be a very good figure. But let me say, Maria, that's so interesting you say about your bartending nightmares. When I was – we used to call it a waitress. Now you say server. But when I was a waitress back in the day, I used to have almost every night those waitress nightmares about being given seven tables and I couldn't find the door to the kitchen and everyone ordered all at the same time. So there must be something about waiting on people that triggers nightmares.
10 years out of it. And I have to say I'm 52 years old and I still have dreams where I cannot find my class at high school or I have no idea my combination to my locker. All these years later.
I know. I think that's a classic dream. But Maria, I appreciate the call to Radio Times.
Have a great day.
You too. And I appreciate the comments as well about the show. Well, as I said, we are in this sort of weird hiatus. Looks like we're I can see people trying to find our guests, but we can't seem to. So that means you're the guest on Radio Times. And you can call us as Maria and also as Janet have about whatever, frankly, is on your mind. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Looks like we have a Mrs. Lon joining us from Chester County. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm sorry about your problem.
Yeah, me too. I was looking forward to that.
One thing that I wanted to mention that I'm not sure you're aware of. The Delaware River Basin Commission, my husband, this was quite some time ago, when he was at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency office in Philadelphia, had been asked to do a special report for the Delaware River Basin Commission on the water and planning for the future. And one of the things that he raised an alarm about and was very concerned about were the two major aquifers that feed all the water supply in New Jersey. Huh. One is in the north and one is in the south. And both were being impacted very significantly and severely by actions that were not being addressed properly. And I think that surely you have some scientists at Princeton that can look into that and review the old reports, because it was very well widely sent around to public comment. And they should be available to the public.
Well, that's interesting. And how far back does that go?
In the early 80s the report went out. Draft report for the Delaware River Basin Commission. So contacting that organization,
sure.
That's five states, you know, or four states,
yep.
And, you know, get the facts and start working on it. That water supply is... that's critical to the people in the state.
Well, indeed it is, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I made a note of that, and I appreciate the idea and suggestion. Thanks for calling into the show. And it looks like we do have our guest after all. So a very quick interview with Paul Wallace. He's European economics editor for The Economist. And we called him up because we noticed that the euro has been dropping pretty precipitously. In fact, if you're planning a trip to Europe this year, you are in luck because your dollar will go much further. The euro has hit what looks like a 12-year low. And Paul Wallace, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
And likewise.
I'm not sure where you were, but I'm glad you're here now.
I was here.
I know you were, and I apologize that it took so long to get you on the air.
Yeah.
So are we witnessing the weakness of the euro and the strength of the dollar, or some version of that?
Oh, definitely, yes. And it's a year or so ago, the ECB, the European Central Bank, was complaining about the strength of the euro and worrying about the impact of the strength of the euro in terms of low inflation. And, the euro is down about a fifth since then, which is a big fall against the dollar.
So what is driving the downward trajectory of the euro?
Well, it's been underway, actually, since that peak in the spring. I mean, the ECB has been taking a lot of measures to try to stimulate the eurozone economy, which has basically been flat and has been concerned about inflation being incredibly low. So it started off by bringing in negative interest rates. That was in June of last year. And then it's done various other things. And then finally, it took the step which many people thought it never would do, which is to introduce quantitative easing,
yeah,
which got underway in March, March the 9th.
Something that the Federal Reserve has been doing in this country. Do you think that will help stabilize the euro then?
Well, I don't know about stabilize it. No, I think anticipation of quantitative easing has been a factor bringing down the euro, and then the implementation. The curious thing is, because financial markets are expected to, are forward looking. The curious thing is that you would think that by the time it was actually introduced, given the fact that it was a long time between the decision that they took in January and the actual implementation, that it would all be in the price. But no, I mean the euro fell further.
So is the fact that reflecting the weakness of the economy in Europe?
Well, actually, the funny thing is, and people will be arguing about it forever, presumably the academics will be. I mean, I think the eurozone economy was probably, well, we know the eurozone economy was picking up in the final quarter of last year when growth was a bit stronger than expected. Mm-hmm. And also, the thing is that the euro area is benefiting a lot from the fall in oil prices and the resulting fall in energy prices. So that's a big, that's like a sort of big tax cut. I think things were looking up, but, this is obviously a further boost to the economy.
Well, and anyone traveling to Europe is probably, I'm sure, undoubtedly very happy about the fact that the dollar and the euro, there's almost parity there. Who are the biggest losers, you think, in this country with a low euro?
In the U.S., well, obviously, it's exporters,
right,
are finding things harder. Although, for the U.S. you have a lot of trade, but the U.S. economy is so big that it's relatively closed. So the impact, but, Yellen was complaining about the strength of the dollar, right, and the fact that it will tend to affect both exports. They'll be lower than you might otherwise have expected them, and will tend to have an impact on imports. So there'll be a smaller effect from net trade for the U.S. economy. But I think the U.S. economy is doing just fine, really.
Well, and we're almost out of time here. How low do you think the euro can go, or is
It's been lower before. I mean, it went below parity not long after it was launched. But I don't know. I mean, it may, it's sort of bouncing. To me, it looks like it's bouncing around a level around 110, and maybe that's it. It's difficult to know.
Well, on that note, and I apologize that it took you so long to get you on the air, Paul Wallace.
Thanks. I'm so sorry, yeah.
No, not your fault. But I appreciate the fact that you joined us even briefly on Radio Times, Paul
All
Wallace.
Right. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. He's a European economics editor for The Economist. And again, we began our conversation with Kate Czernicki, who had been covering or has been covering the ExxonMobil agreement with the Christie administration for The New York Times. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.